Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
I'm Harvey Eisner, Editor-in-Chief of Firehouse Magazine, and welcome to Firehouse Magazine Insider for November 2010. Today I'm going to talk with Battalion Chief John Salka about his article, Response Times, Are They Real? What Does the First to Arrive Fire Department Unit Really Mean? And that will appear on page 134 of the November issue of Firehouse Magazine. You can, the end of the podcast, you can find this article online by following the link at the bottom of the podcast player page. So I'm ready to talk with John Salka about his article, Response Times, Are They Real? What Does First to Arrive Fire Department Unit Really Mean? Response times, are they real? And who actually uses them, Chief?
Well, you know what? Response times is getting to be a bigger issue now, certainly in the FDNY, in my department. We've been looking at them for a long time and paying a lot of attention to them and trying to reduce them. Obviously, the sooner we get to the scene of an incident, the more quickly we can handle it and the more quickly we can bring it under control and save lives and property and all the other things that we do. I wrote the article because response times are getting very big, and actually I started to look at it and think, well, what actually is a response time, and what actually qualifies for the fire department being at the scene of a fire, which is what I ended up explaining through the rest of the article.
Okay. A dispatcher will get a call from somebody, and depending on the dispatch system, can dispatch times differ, and why?
Oh, absolutely, and actually one of the things I bring up in the article is what is included in response time. Some places actually include it from receipt of alarm, meaning from when the dispatcher or the call taker picks up the phone until the fire department arrives at the scene. So now we've included some, whether they're civilian or uniform folks, now we've included the actions and the speed of some other people into the response time. So sometimes it does include the dispatcher, and sometimes it does not. Sometimes it counts, or some departments consider response time from when the fire company is dispatched after the call is taken and you know, the questions are asked. Then they send it to a fire company and they start the time there. Now, what I mentioned in the article is the fact that some dispatchers are full-time dispatchers. Some dispatchers, meaning that they're full-time fire department dispatchers. They're at a fire department communications office. Other dispatchers are part-timers. They work for the police department, but they answer the fire department calls. Some dispatchers are one guy sitting in a room somewhere for a big county, maybe rural, but still a big county. All of a sudden, they get a bunch of phone calls. This guy's got a bunch of people basically on hold. So there's quite a lot of different situations that can evolve just at the dispatch end.
Of course, if it's bad weather or as EMS calls come in or even other fire calls or even just general information calls, this could slow down the dispatch. Is that correct?
Oh, sure. Of course, the volume of calls is the important thing there. Big place like New York City that has all sorts of dispatches and all sorts of call takers, they get to handle it. But you get to smaller towns, whether they're career departments or volunteer, county dispatch systems, right down to, like I said, little places where there might just be one guy or one gal on duty at the desk, taking the calls and doing the dispatching and doing everything else, you know.
Okay. Response time in the firehouse. How long should it take firefighters to get out and respond?
You know, everybody's been telling us for years this is the one that we're most in control of, and they're really right. This is, you know, if the minute the bells go off or the tones go off or the voice alarm is activated, whatever it is, you pretty much need to stop and start moving towards the rig and figuring out what you're doing. And the FDNY, we're pretty fortunate. The alarm goes off, a tone goes off, and it says engine, ladder, battalion. So you know right off the bat, before the particulars come through, before the address comes through or the box number, you already know who's getting dispatched. So you can sort of start moving out to the apparatus and getting on the rig, and, you know, you're gonna get your ticket or you're going to get a verbal description of where you're going. And the volunteers, obviously, it's a little bit different. You might not be sitting in the firehouse, so there's a variation there. But still, how quickly you get to your car to get down to the volunteer firehouse or run across the street from your job or whatever it is, that's something that you're in pretty good control of. And if you cut down on that, that certainly is going to cut down on the total response time.
Talking about career departments, is there any excuse in your article there it said potentially maybe somebody could take several minutes to get to the rig. Is there any excuse to have anybody boarding the rig taking minutes?
I'll be damned if I can figure that one out. Absolutely not. If you're in a firehouse and you're on duty and you're not on that rig, I don't know what else you could possibly be doing unless it just seems impossible. That's the idea of having a paid fire department, career people, is that you're on duty, you're in uniform, your gear's on the rig, you're ready to go. The alarm goes off, you should be, however long it takes you to walk from the farthest point to the firehouse to the apparatus, that's as much time as it should take you. Obviously, it's going to take, 15, 20, 25, 30 more seconds for the doors to go up and the gear to get on and the radios to be slung over your shoulder and the other little activities that you got to do before you maybe climb on the apparatus. But shouldn't take too much longer than that, that's for sure.
Should a responding unit, when they arrive on the scene, whether it's an engine, a ladder, a chief, or rescue, should they, when they arrive, tell dispatch if they don't have a computer just to mark that incident time arriving?
Well, we've done that for a long time in the FDNY. We had a 1084 signal, which was a verbal thing, and now it's a computer button that we press when we get there. I was just talking to one of my colleagues the other day about this. It's almost a non-issue now. It was a big issue for a while. It took quite a while for us to get used to doing that and to be reminded of doing it, and if the computer wasn't working, to get on the radio and say it, just to mark that arrival moment. But now it's pretty much just done almost automatically. We've pretty much worked that into our regular routine. And it's a good idea, because somewhere along the line, if you're looking at response time, if you're going to start to use response times critically or administratively or however you're going to use that information, marking that moment is pretty important, how long it takes maybe the first engine or the first truck or the first several units to assemble at the scene.
Okay. You said that, if a chief arrives in a nice, shiny SUV, he's not really going to be able to do anything except maybe call for help and give some orders. So it takes adequate manpower to put water on the fire, search, vent, etc. Is there any way to reduce response time?
Well, short of adding more companies or moving companies, response times are response times. Wherever your firehouses are is where they are. However long it takes a fire apparatus to crank up the motor, put the doors up, and drive from that place to where you are, that's the response time. Now, obviously, there's different modes of responding. There's code 1, code 3, license sirens, no license sirens, non-emergency, and emergency. We're doing some experimenting with that right now in the FDNY in Queens. I really don't know if there's really any way to make response times faster other than that one particular part of it, which we mentioned a moment ago, the inside the firehouse, the in quarters part of the turnout, getting to the rig quickly, getting on the road, and then you're pretty much on a pretty steady beat. You shouldn't be really driving, erratically or too fast, and depending on where you are, on a rural road or in a city, in an urban area, you might have traffic to deal with or red lights or just distance.
Okay. I was thinking on my own that the initial dispatch of companies, depending on what the incident is, if there are more companies responding, it'll take a quicker time for those units to get there to adequately put water on the fire. Also, if there's sometimes you need to call for help right away, sometimes people might want to wait a little while, but if there's a long distance that the next units have to travel, that's just increasing your response time. And also, the faster RIT teams, if you call them right away, the faster they'll be there. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. And I do that in a lot of the lectures. Sometimes when I'm down there at the Baltimore Expo with you guys, doing classes down there, I tell everybody all the time, call for help immediately. Call for help immediately. I mean, if you're going out on a house fire and there's only one rig rolling out of your urban or your suburban firehouse and you get three guys on it and there's only one pumper rolling right now because you have a small department with a large area, you're already understaffed and you already have too long of a response time. Why would you wait? If the call is for smoke in the house, why don't you go under the assumption that this is a house fire? Why don't you say, have automatic mutual aid, have automatic companies start responding? And you know what? If we get there and it turns out to be a barbecue or a car overheating or a minor fire that can be easily handled by one unit, well, but then you slow everybody down or turn them around after you get there. But if you wait till you get there to call for more help, well, now everybody hasn't even started their motors yet. Now again, like you said, the second-do engine or the second-do truck or your mutual aid companies are going to be even further delayed by the fact that you didn't bother calling them at the height of the incident,
Okay. And at the final question that I have, I figured out that there were several response times that were really critical. As a chief, you have to write a lot of reports. And I was thinking that people injured or killed in a fire, large loss of dollar figures in a commercial building, large loss, dollar loss, and or an arson would probably be three of the most critical that response times would be needed for reports and things like that for later on.
Right. I imagine you are right. Those are, like you said, critical incidents where there's either a loss of life or a large fire, lost dollars or valuables, or an arson, which could be a crime. However, you know what? Even if you have a one-room fire in a private dwelling where there's an 89-year-old woman sitting there that she can't get out because she's old or she's just incapable of getting herself out, doesn't really matter to me whether there's a large loss of life or whether there's a large building that's lost. Even if it's just a single room and contents fire with a single person being threatened by it, response times are response times. We've got to get there. You know, we got to try and get there as fast as we can and deliver the service that we're there to deliver. You know, everybody's under different circumstances. Like I said, we have urban and we have suburban and we have rural departments. We have staffing differences everywhere. One of my major points that we really didn't touch on was what really is a response time? Is a response time when the first, like you mentioned earlier, when the first chief gets there with his nice white shirt and his sunglasses on and his SUV, or even when the first engine gets there with just two guys in the front seat, an officer and a driver, or maybe even just three guys, you know, an officer, a driver, and one firefighter in the back step. What can they really do with two in, two out, with RIT, with all these other requirements? I don't know if that justifies them saying we're at the scene stopping the clock. There's really nothing they can do but lay a hose line and wait for somebody else to get there. So it's a much bigger issue than just counting from when the first fire truck gets to the scene. But obviously, all of us need to just pay attention on about getting out quickly and getting people there as quickly as we can, you know, in the safest manner that we can, and assembling the lot, at least the minimum size group that we need to begin fire operations.
Very good. You've been listening to Harvey Eisner and John Salka, Battalion Chief FDNY, about his article in the November issue on page 134, his column, The Fire Scene, usually the last page in the magazine. And we were just discussing the next article for November, Response Times, Are They Real? What Does the First to Arrive Fire Department Unit Really Mean? And you can find this article online by following the link at the bottom of the podcast page. John, thank you very much.
Thanks, Harvey.
Okay, thank you.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.